Lahir Maharaj.
Him is the Gaudiya Vaishnava New Year's Day, which makes tonight our New Year's Eve, an appropriate time to prepare our hearts to receive the incomparable gift that Lord Gauranga came to bestow upon this world. He appears once in a day of Brahma, which means his last appearance was 8.64 billion years ago. His next appearance will be the same amount of time. And to be present at this time, when his lila is continuing to unfold, is such an incomparable blessing. To take very seriously. He appears in the Kali Yuga directly following the appearance of Sri Krishna at the close of the Dwapara Yuga, as is hinted in the scripture. Mahabharata tells us that Krishna appears in the Kali Yuga as a Brahmin with golden complexion to promulgate the yajna in the form of congregational chanting. Sankirtan. The Bhagavatam contains the same statement and elaborates that Krishna appears in this Kali Yuga with all his family, associates, consorts, and servitors. He appears as a Brahmana with golden complexion. After Krishna appears as Godhead, Sri Krishna Chaitanya appears as the best of devotees in the company of his congregation of devotees, his own beloved ones, in order to teach by his own example how Krishna is to be served. This is the main cause of the advent of Sri Chaitanya. The prayer of Advaita and the suffering of the devotees are the secondary causes which were addressed perfectly as a consequence of his coming to fulfill his own internal reasons. And unless this real cause of his appearance is properly grasped, the most characteristic activities of Sri Chaitanya can never be properly understood. Setting the scene in Navadvip dwelled a most generous and pure-hearted Brahmana devoted to his spiritual services, resembling in his immaculate purity Vasudeva, the father of Sri Krishna. This is, of course, Jagannath Mishra, whose revered consort's name was Sachi Devi, the most loyal of matrons, the very embodiment of pure devotion to Krishna, and thereby addressed as the mother of the whole universe. She had previously given birth to 8 daughters who all left this world shortly after birth. 9th child being a response to their prayers to Sri Vishnu for a male child, and thus Vishwarup was born 10 years before Lord Chaitanya. So Sri Krishna entered first the heart of Jagannath Mishra, from where he transferred to the heart of Sachi Devi, at which time the mouths of Anantashesh uttered unlimited glory that was heard by Sachi and Jagannath Mishra as if in a dream. And Mishra told Sachi that I had a dream that an effulgent realm entered my heart from where I passed it on to you. And it seems that some great personality is about to take birth. That was his dream, which was validated in other indications, which he experiences a difference everywhere. His body in the house, his house, appeared effulgent, like the abode of Lakshmi. And as never before, everyone showed him honor everywhere he went. Money, clothing, bhoga, everything needed poured unsolicited into his house. Such he noticed heavenly figures in the sky that appeared to be offering prayers to her, but no one else could see them. The Lord's parents felt transported with inexpressible delight. And applying themselves with special endeavor to the worship of their Shalagram, awaited the impending advent of the Lord. After 13 months of expectant suspense in pregnancy, the Lord is born tomorrow evening with the rising of the full moon, which was in an eclipse, in the midst of loud chanting of the holy names of Krishna, which is the custom of the people during an eclipse. Mother Nature joined with all of mankind and all the gods to pay homage to the full moon of Nadia, risen on the eastern horizon, and the normal lunar disk with all its putt marks hid its face in humility under the guise of an eclipse. On the appearance of the perfect moon, absolutely free from any defects, on that blessed moment of nativity of the most exquisitely beautiful baby, the most favorable constellations all blended together to greet their Lord. And strange forms were observed crowding into the courtyard, lying prostrate on the bare earth in the act of adoration, waving chamaras, holding the parasol, singing, dancing, and playing on drums and flutes in the ecstasy of unbounded joy. And at that very instant, Sri Advaita in Shantipur suddenly jumped up with delight and danced with joy, arm in arm with Haridas Thakur, to the blissful surprise of all onlookers. All devotees had the same experience. The tide of joy that swept and eddied over all of Nadia and through the very birds and beasts and all of nature into a delirium of ecstatic joy evades all but those special pens of Vrindavan Das Thakur and Kaviraj Goswami, who are alone privileged to describe the incident. The brush of no earthly or celestial artist can do justice to the delicate assemblage of color, warmth, holy fragrance, the volume of delirious joy, free from the least suggestion of grossness, that manifests altogether at the birth of Lord Chaitanya. Glorified by the sages as the holy eve, most highly cherished by all pure devotees, who declare the worship of this day to have the power to kindle ecstatic love for Krishna. With the birth of the baby, a long trail of visitors, male and female, hastened to Sati's house to make suitable offerings. Gods and goddesses, assuming the form of Brahmanas and Brahmanis, and others mixed with the crowd to gain the sight of the baby and greet the feet of Sri Gaurasundar, where dancers, singers, musicians flocked to the festive occasion. Chandrasekhar Acharya Srivas Pandit performed the purificatory birth rites in Purandar Misha, that's Jagannath Misha, made suitable gifts to all those who brought presents to his baby on the occasion. Sita Thakurani made her way from Shantipur, that's Advaita's wife, to see the baby, along with Malini Devi, Srivas's wife, and Jagannath Misha gave everything he had in charity. And Sri Nilambar Chakravarti, Satyamata's father, took Jagannath Misha aside and informed him in a whisper that the signs on the form of the child indicated a very great personality, transcendental soul, who would deliver all the world. So, there's a parallel which is apparent with the appearance of Sri Krishna when Sri Vasudeva transferred to Devaki the pure cognitive essence within his heart. And this is actually the case for all devotees. Before the Lord appears to the devotee in a visible form, a long period passes during which he is manifest internally, in the heart, in the pure consciousness of the devotee. Thereafter, as the sky of the east holds the moon, Devaki, of pure cognition, by the process of initiation, Vasudev received in her transcendentally pure heart Sri Krishna, the embodiment of universal well-being, the supreme soul of all souls. And the parallel is repeated here in the birth of Lord Chaitanya. Now, there is another astrologer who, a mystery astrologer in the assembly, and he and Nilambar Chakravarti calculated that this boy would be far greater than any king, greater than Brihaspati, the celestial sage in learning, and without any effort would develop all good qualities. And then the mystery astrologer cast his horoscope and pronounced that this boy is none other than Lord Narayan himself, who has come to reestablish the eternal religion of which he will be the most extraordinary preacher, and he will deliver the whole world. He will offer to anyone and everyone, indiscriminately, that treasure which is forever coveted by the greatest devotees, beginning with Brahma, Shiva, Shukadeva, Goswami. In receiving his darshan, people everywhere will be melted into compassion and kindness for all jivas. And they will attain love for him, who is the embodiment of love for Krishna. Not to speak of others, even the yavanas, the declared enemies of Vishnu, will worship the feet of his child, and all the countless worlds will sing his glories. All people from the brahmanas on down will offer obeisances to him, the very embodiment of the highest and purest form of religion. And just as Vishnu appeared in this world to lead others to religion, so too will this child. How fortunate I am to calculate his horoscope, for which I award him the name Sri Vishwambar. That astrologer purposely omitted what he further saw, that this child would later take sannyas and leave Navadvip. He did not want to mar the unmixed happiness of the occasion. Satyadevi saw female figures, divinely beautiful, smilingly, put blades of durva grass and unhusked rice on the head of the infant while uttering benedictions. Most significant be, they blessed the child, may you live forever. And they took the dust of Sati's feet on their heads as they left. The baby remained for a full month in the maternity house, small hut built on the bank of the Ganges, as a temporary accommodation for mother and child, which was watched day and night by the kinsfolk, the family, for two reasons. One is the baby cried incessantly and could only be pacified when he heard the chanting of Krishna's name. And everyone soon grasped this truth, and they all engaged in sankirtan as soon as he began to cry, as the only means of pacifying him. There's another reason for such constant vigilance, being the unaccountable fear, which was shared by all, that the life of the baby was in danger from ghosts and witches and thieves. And they accordingly often recited the customary invocations to Vishnu and Devi for the protection of the child. They often chanted the name of Lord Nrisimhadev because the devas in subtle invisible forms were playing tricks in the house to inspire the family to chant the name of Lord Nrisimha for the pleasure of the baby, and in spite of all these precautions, there were frequent alarms caused by the supposed detection of the egress of thieves and ghosts who made their way into the house unperceived even by such a large body of devoted observers. And it was the gods, the devas, who played all these pranks, coming for a sight of the baby and lingering to amuse themselves on the causeless anxiety of all persons on the Lord's account. As he grew a little bit, he was able to stand a little bit, he would dance. And there was clearly something divine in the way he danced. The exquisite beauty, the charming figure, and his forehead and cheeks decorated with elegant patterns by his mother, his hair tied in a top knot and adorned with yellow flowers, caused tears of joy to well in the eyes of Sachimata and her friends, who were so enraptured at the sight that they lost consciousness of the material world, being enchanted by the graceful golden figure dancing before them. And they saw the correlation that, first of all, when they chanted in Sankirtan, it was the only means to stop him from crying. And when he stopped crying, he smiled to convey his pleasure upon all those participants in the Sankirtan. And then when he danced, those ladies felt the whole universe was dancing with him. And when he grew a little more, he would spontaneously scamper out of the kirtan and into the streets, much to the alarm of his parents. He would quickly return with his little tender lotus hands filled with sandesh and other types of sweets, which he would personally distribute to everyone who was chanting Hare Krishna, to assure them that anyone who dedicates themselves to his service and pleases him by taking shelter of the holy name, he will preserve what they have and provide what they lack. Nevertheless, Nimai was quite unruly. Nimai was the name given by Sachimata. Vishwambar was the name given by Nilambar Chakravarti. And his energy was untiring, and he did all kinds of things that shocked his mother's notions of propriety. And she began to wonder if there was little something wrong in his head, or was he possessed by some evil spirits? The only thing that was obvious was that Nimai loved her intensely with great devotion to his mother. And then when he was 5 years old, he began to cry, and everyone chanted Hare Krishna to pacify him. It failed to act as it always had before, the holy name producing no effect on this occasion. His parents were alarmed. So Sachimata, in an agonizing tone, asked him, "Why do you break our hearts like this? Tell us what you want and we will get it for you." And Nimai, in the midst of sobbing, replied, "If you really want to please me, then bring me the offerings, especially Kadasi offerings." Remember, he's a 5-year-old child. He doesn't even know Jagadish and Hiranyapandit. But he said, "I want the offerings that they have made as their offering to Krishna today. Now, it was clear in his demeanor that he was not willing to wait for the offering. He wanted the offering before it was offered to Krishna for himself. So Nimai's request shocked everyone. Why? I mean, does he even know that it's Ekadasi? So why is he, and how does he know that on this particular day, these Brahmins have made a special offering to Krishna? Now, it would be a sacrilege for him to ask that offering for himself. And Satsi and Jagannath were bewildered how to extricate themselves from this extremely awkward situation. But then they quickly realized that if they did not bring him the offering, he would not stop crying, and that broke their hearts. And Nimai affirmed that he would have that offering or nothing at all could pacify him. So Jagannath Misha went to his friends, Hiranya and Jagadish, who Nimai did not even know. And they came running to Mishra's house to see what the real matter was. And they saw that the child, amidst this exquisite beauty, had become still even more beautiful under the influence of his present feelings. And they felt it was impossible for a boy so young to play the part he was doing. And the idea possessed their minds that the infant Krishna, their own deity, Bal Gopal, must have been so enchanted with the beauty of this child that he entered within his heart. They were certain that Bal Gopal is demanding the offerings through little Nimai. And the offerings that they had prepared and were just ready to offer to Krishna, their Bal Gopal was now claiming through this child. And the idea thrilled them with great emotion. They ran back to their houses, packed up the offering, brought it to Misha's house, and put everything before Nimai and said, "Take the offering, beautiful Nimai, and let Gopal partake of the offering through you." And after that point, those two brahmanas, devotees of Bal Gopal, became the most ardent followers of Nimai. And he ate a little, threw some away, and distributed the rest. And Satyamata was watching her child grow with increasing anxiety, the idea gathering strength in her mind that there was something wrong with him, or else he was under the influence of some spirit. But she was afraid to express herself. So she confided in her sister. And when her sister came, she unburdened her heart and said, "Dear sister, I do not understand why a child who is so good in every way and so fair should act so whimsically at times. What should I do?" So her sister advised her that you should take the opinion of an assembly of wise matrons of the neighborhood. So Sati was obliged to accept this, even though she was not comfortable about it. She called the matrons. They assembled in her house. Now, these matrons were all the wives of pundits, savants, who had passed their days in the midst of intellectual conversations and thus fancied that they were competent enough to settle the matter. And so without any misgivings, they sat in judgment of the nor the acts of Nimai. And Sachi related to, she relayed the tale of her sorrow with an abundance of tears and said, "Now my child is very affectionate, and he appears to be very intelligent also. And I don't blame him for the many times he demolishes the house and everything in it. What troubles my heart is he has no reverence for the demigods and is sacrilegious enough to take their offerings." Of course, before they were offered. "And he has no idea of what's pure and impure. And as absurd as it may seem, he seems to have his own opinion on this point. He holds utter contempt for the notion that it pollutes a man to touch impure things. And if I scold him for doing so, which he often does, he stops me by declaring that everything becomes pure and holy by his touch." So everyone present hearing this felt deeply pained that such a good lady as Sachi had to express such serious charges against her beloved child. So the ladies concluded that this is definitely a very serious matter. And they asked her, "Was there a certain point when you noticed a change in his demeanor?" And she answered, "Yes. On a certain night, his room was filled with luminous figures bending over his bed as he slept, as if caressing him." And of course, Jagannath Misha, you know, he also saw that the devas descending from heaven placed him on a high altar and danced all around him in Sankirtan. So hearing such things, the matrons unanimously concluded that this must be the work of evil spirits. And just then Nimai appeared amidst them. And the presiding matron over this assembly challenged him, "Nimai, you are the son of a Brahmin, the most learned man. How is it that you have no respect either for the gods or the Brahmins?" And Nimai, with the most innocent smile, replied, "I revere no one, because everyone should revere me." And Sachi was shocked that there were so many eyewitnesses to what she had already been experiencing. And feeling that Nimai must have highly offended the devas, she tried to appease them by appealing to their mercy, praying, "All ye gods who are like jewels upon my head, I revere you all," and casting her eyes towards the heavens with folded palms, she addressed, "O ye residents of heaven, please don't be offended by the words of my wild child. He's not aware of what he's saying." But when she burst into tears, the fact is that she was more alarmed because her consciousness verified that her boy was very much aware of what he was saying. So after prolonged deliberation, the wise matrons came to their conclusion that this is definitely the work of evil spirits, and they recommended a ceremony performed for his reformation by petitioning Goddess Shasti, who is the protectress of children, whose favor be induced by an offering made with special attention to awarding his protection. And Sachi agreed with this conclusion, but she was still anxious that what if he steals her offering? In which case, Shastri will not be pleased. And he might be in more trouble. So the matrons told her, just be very secretive. Don't let him see you make the offering. Take it to a secluded place with utmost secrecy. So while Nimai was out playing, which he loved to do, and would stay out for indefinite periods of time, she made the offering, hid it under her sari, and proceeded to the altar of Shastri in a secluded place. And no sooner had she thought in her mind that I succeeded in evading Nimai that he appeared right before her on the path with his arms outstretched. He said, Mother Sachi, where are you going? And what are you hiding under your sari? And why are you walking on this private path to a secluded place? So, he demanded to know what she was hiding under the folds of her sari. And Sachimata found herself in inextricable difficulty. She could only stammer, Dear Nimai, go home. But he said, I think I know what you're hiding. I'm sure it's sweets. And Sachimata, I'm so hungry. Please feed me. And she pleaded with him, just let me make the offering and I'll give everything to you. This is meant for Goddess Shastri. And I promise you, you can have the whole offering. But he demanded, Mother, I'm very hungry, and I can't wait so long. I must have the offering at this instant. And then he grabbed the tray and ran off. And it was as if a thunderbolt had crashed upon Sachi's head. And she cried out in sorrow and anguish, Are you not a Brahmin's son? I'll throw myself in the Ganges and end my life. Then he came back and said, Console yourself, mother. I assure you, Shastri will be more pleased that I have eaten the offering. Then Sachi said, Your conduct will bring ruin upon you. And weeping bitterly, she turned to the altar of Goddess Shastri, knelt down, and prayed that Shastri forgive her son for his audacity. When he grew a little older, a very sweet and ills in revealing pastime took place when another devotee of Bal Gopal, the pilgrim Brahmin, arrived in Navadvip. Now, right at this time, as the Lord was revealing his true identity, with certain exceptions, as when Jagannath Mishra called out, O Vishvambar, please bring me my book. Hearing his father's words, Nimai ran into the house, gave the book to Jagannath Mishra, and then ran out. But Mishra was hearing the tinkling anklets of ankle bells He told Madhusachi, Nimai is not wearing ankle bells. Where'd that sound come from? Moving, synchronized to his motions. They didn't know what to say, what to think. Then they saw another wonder. All over the floor, everywhere Nimai had tread while going for and delivering the book, were footprints marked with the flag, thunderbolt, elephant goad, flag, and other auspicious signs. Gazing at those footprints, the parents became filled with bliss, and tears flowed from their eyes, and their hair stood on end. And they bowed down to those lotus footprints and said, "We are delivered. We'll never take birth again." And they were thinking that it was their Gopal deity roaming around the house, leaving his footprints exactly where Nimai had tread. So Misha told Sachi, "Make a special sweet rice offering with ghee to our Damodar Shalagram Shila and have a special abhishek for him in the morning, because he's roaming around the room, leaving his footprints wherever Nimai is walking." So as his parents joyfully worshiped the Shalagram Shila, Nimai watched and smiled with great pleasure in his heart. And then the pilgrim Brahman arrived, who is always chanting his Gopal mantra. And he never ate anything that was not offered to his Lord Gopal. And after journeying to many places of pilgrimage by destiny, he came to Navadvip, wearing the Shalagram Shila, the Bal Gopal around his neck, and luminous with peerless brahminical effulgence, always chanting Krishna, Krishna. In seeing the Brahman's effulgence and hearing his chanting, Mishra stood up and respectfully bowed down before him. He washed the Brahman's feet and offered him a seat. And when he was comfortable, Mishra asked him, "From where do you hail?" And the Brahman said, "I do not have any home in any country or province. I simply wander on pilgrimage, drawn to wherever my heart takes me." The purity of his words inspired Misha to bow down again and tell him, "The world is fortunate to have you traveling in this way. And I am most fortunate that you've come to my home. And I beg you, let me arrange for you to cook the offering to your Bal Gopal." And the Brahman said, "O Jagannath Mishra, if that pleases you, I will happily accept." And Mishra cleaned the kitchen so thoroughly and brought all ingredients to the Brahman for his cooking the offering, which he did with great happiness. And just as he was about to make the offering to Gopal, little Nimai thought, "I will bless him in a special way with my darshan, special darshan." And while the Brahmana entered meditation, offering his meal to his beloved Gopal, suddenly Nimai appeared before him, his golden limbs covered with dust, shimmering like chintamani and clothed only by the four directions, his eyes reddish. And he took a handful of the Brahman's offering and placed it in his own beautiful lotus mouth. He ate one mouthful, then he looked at the Brahman, who shouted out, "Hi, hi, this restless boy has spoiled my offering." Nimai ran away. Jagannath Mishra, hearing what the Brahmin was crying, came running, only to see Nimai running away while still eating the rice. Jagannath Mishra started to chase after Nimai to chastise him, but the Brahmin stood up and grasped Mishra's hand and pleaded, "You are a respectable and learned person. Your son is just a young child. What knowledge can he have about what's right and wrong? Therefore, there will be no benefit in chastising him." Jagannath Mishra very unhappily placed his head in his hands. He was speechless, thinking that his guest had been offended. The Brahmana said, "Do not be unhappy at heart. The Supreme Lord knows everything. Just bring me whatever fruits, roots, or whatever you have in the house, and that will be my meal for the day. It is obvious that Providence has not sanctioned me to have a regular meal. So whatever you have, I'll accept." Mishra would not hear of it. "If you accept me as your servant, then please agree to cook again. We have all the ingredients. And if you cook again and make your offerings successful, and your pleas will be happy." And all the family members joined in, "Please cook again." So the Brahmin said, "If that is your desire, I will comply." They cleaned the kitchen again, made all the arrangements. The Brahmin cooked again. And the family members discussed amongst themselves that Nimai is very restless. He may spoil the offering again. So take him to a neighbor's house. Watch him vigilantly. Don't let him leave until the Brahmin finishes his offering and honors prasad. So Sachi took Nimai to a neighbor's house. And the ladies all said, "Nimai, listen. What are you doing? Why do you eat a Brahmin's food like that?" And with the most charming smile on his moonlight face, Nimai replied, "How am I at fault? He called me by name. And no one can understand. Nimai, you rascal. Now you'll lose your caste. You don't know who this Brahmin is, where he comes from, who his family is. And you've eaten the food of a stranger. You can lose your caste for this." Nimai smiled again and told them, "I'm a gopa. I always eat food cooked by brahmanas. How can a gopa lose his caste by eating the offering a brahmana makes to him?" And he just smiled and enchanted everyone all the more. While in the most tricky way, revealing the truth about himself, which no one understood because they were bewildered by the spell of his yoga maya. They simply laughed and held him in their arms as they floated in an ocean of bliss to allow the Brahmin time to cook again. And when he sat down to make his offering for the third time, and he simply contemplated the holy name, "My Lord Gopal," to whom he was making the offering, Lord Chaitanya, non-different from Bal Gopal, fully aware, bewildered everyone in the neighbor's house so that he could slip away unnoticed, and smiling so beautifully, approached the Brahmin while he was lost in meditation. Nimai took a handful of rice and ate it. The Brahmin opened his eyes and saw him and cried out again, "Hi, hi," screaming in anguish. As Nimai continued to eat the rice, until Jagannath Mishra ran in, grabbed a stick and angrily chased after Nimai, who entered a room with Mishra screaming in anger behind him. Screaming at me, I see what you've done today. I'm a learned and respectable Brahmin. But to your mind, what am I? Who has such a thief in their home? And he chased after the Lord. And Mishra, he was furious. Let me go. Today I will chastise him. And the family members and neighbors said the same thing the Brahmin did. If you chastise him, he doesn't even know what's right and wrong. So what will it benefit? It will simply mar your saintly reputation. So, you know, little children are restless by nature. He's too young to know what's right and wrong. So Mishra could not be pacified except by the pilgrim Brahmin, who grasped Mishra's hand and pleaded with him, "Best of the Mishras, this boy is not at fault. What is destined to happen on a certain day will certainly come to pass. It is not written in my destiny to have cooked food to offer to my deity or to honor his as his remnants today. This is obvious by this third attempt." But Mishra was so dejected he couldn't even lift his face as he held his head in his hands. And then to the rescue came Vishwarup, the highest extreme of beauty, with no comparison in the 14 worlds, because he was Lord Nityananda in another form, with the truths of all scriptures always on his tongue. And seeing this wonderful form of Vishwarup, the pilgrim Brahmin was enchanted. And he stared with fixed eyes upon his beauty. And he asked Jagannath Mishra, "Whose son is this?" And everyone said, "He's Mishra's son." Hearing this, Brahmin was so happy that he embraced Vishwarup and said, "Fortunate are the father and mother of such a son." Vishwarup offered obeisances to the Brahmin and sat down and spoke words that was like a stream of nectar. He told the Brahmin, "Anyone who has you for a guest in his home becomes very fortunate. And you travel all over simply to purify the world. I am very fortunate to have you as my guest. And I am most unfortunate because I made you fast." In hearing what happened, I feel saddened at heart. And the Brahmin replied, "Please do not be sad. Just, you know, whatever fruits and roots, that's what I'm used to living on because I live in the forest. I seldom get rice. And I won't get it tonight. I only get rice if in some way it naturally comes to me. But gazing upon you, Vishwarup, I feel such satisfaction, more than eating millions and millions of opulent meals. Just bring me whatever fruits and roots are found anywhere and I'll eat that for my day's sustenance." Still, Jagannath Mishra could not even say anything. He was so dejected and shocked by what happened. So Vishwarup continued the conversation. "O saintly one, you are an ocean of mercy. And I'm reluctant to say before you, but it's obvious a saintly person feels sad only because of others' sufferings. And they're happy when others are joyful. So I beseech you, please cook another offering to Krishna for our pleasure, because this will relieve my family's unhappiness. The Brahmin said, I've already cooked twice. Lord Krishna would not allow me to eat. This much is clear. It's not written in destiny that I have a meal today. Surely Krishna does not desire it. Why should I over-endeavor? So by now it's late at night. I will not make an offering so late, so much endeavor. And Vishwarup said, please, I beseech you, cook for our happiness. And Vishwarup grasped the Brahma's feet, and everyone together implored him, cook one more time. And being bewitched by the beauty of Vishwarup, the Brahmana complied, I will cook again. Again, they cleaned the kitchen and brought all the ingredients. And as the Brahmin began to cook, everyone surrounded Nimai to make sure that he would not escape their vigilance. And Jagannath Mishra stood guard at the door. And they bolted the doors from the outside and were confident that now he cannot escape from the neighbor's house to third time steal the Brahmin's offering. And the ladies informed one another that it's safe. Nimai has fallen asleep. And yet their vigilance continued. Until the third offering was completed, the Brahmin sat down, and in meditation, he offered his food to Balagopal, while simultaneously, little Nimai was thinking, I will reveal myself to this Brahmin. And then Nimai wished that Nidra Devi, the goddess of sleep, bewilder everyone. And without any struggle, he evaded them, came back to the offering where the Brahmin was completing his offering. And seeing Nimai a third time appearing before him to steal the offering, he cried out, hi, hi, again, but nobody was awake to hear him, which allowed Nimai and the Brahmin to have a real heart-to-heart conversation. Nimai said, oh, Brahmin, you're so kind and generous. You called me, so I had to come. How am I at fault for this? You were chanting my mantra, calling me by name to come to you, and I could not stay away. I had to come to you, who always yearns to see me. So now I'm revealing myself to you. And at that instant, the form of Nimai transmuted into a wonderful eight-armed form, holding conch, club, disc, lotus. In the fifth hand, he was holding butter, which he ate with the sixth hand. In the seventh and eighth, he played on his flute. In his beautiful form, bedecked with Kastuba jewel, Srivatsa mark, and a necklace of gunja berries, and a peacock feather adorning the crown of feathers upon his head, and reddish lips enhancing his moon-like face. His lotus eyes were restless, and he swung back and forth with the Vajayanti garland swaying along with his shark-shaped earrings. Jeweled anklets decorated his lotus feet, and the effulgence of his toenails dispelled the darkness all around. And then the Brahmin saw, as his eyes adjusted, that the backdrop to this form of the Lord was not an artistic creation. It was Goloka Vrindavan. He saw behind the Lord a Kadamba tree amidst Vrindavan forests filled with singing birds in all directions, gopas, gopis, and cows grazing. And everything he had always contemplated in his deep meditation, he now saw revealed before his very eyes. And the Brahmin fainted. Nimaya placed his graceful hand upon his head, and the Brahmin regained consciousness. Stunned with bliss, he could not speak. He kept fainting again and again. And the Lord touched him and raised him up. As tears flowed from his eyes, he grasped the Lord's lotus feet, weeping loudly. And seeing his apparent distress, the Lord spoke to him so sweetly, "Listen, please listen, O Brahma. For many births, you have been my servant, always yearning to see me. You forever meditated upon me. And for this reason, I now reveal myself to you. The same thing happened, do you remember, in the house of Nanda Maharaj, when you came as a guest, and I ate your offering there as well. From there, I have returned to this world because when I met you in Gokul, you continued on your offering, on your pilgrimage after you ate my offering. I mean, after I ate your offering. But now, I want you to stay in Navadvip. In Nanda's house, I revealed the same form to you, and I ate your offering just as I did now. But this is a secret. Please don't tell anyone. If this secret is revealed while I'm still present on earth, the person who reveals will be destroyed. In this incarnation, I will inaugurate the Sankirtan movement in every country, in every home. I will place the pure loving devotional service, Prema Bhakti, that Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Shuka yearn for but seldom attain. Stay for some days and you'll see all this. But don't tell anybody. After this, sufficiently comforting the Brahmin, Lord Chaitanya returned to his room, resumed his form as a young child, invoked his yoga nidra. As the Brahmin, filled with wonder, crying and shouting and singing and dancing, proclaiming, "Jai Gopal, Jai Bal Gopal," again and again, shouting so loudly that everyone awakened. And when they came to see what the excitement is all about, the Brahmin tried to control himself and eat his meal for the family's pleasure, while concealing in his heart how he yearned to tell everyone what he had seen. They do not know that this child is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by which knowledge he'll be liberated. He's taken birth in Mishra's house. I want to tell the whole world that he's come to deliver them, but he forbade me to do so. So he didn't speak. He simply finished his meal, keeping the Lord's identity a secret. And that Brahmin never went on pilgrimage again. He spent the rest of his days in Navadvip Dham, coming to the house of Mother Sachi every day for that most cherished vision. So, many truths are revealed in this wonderful pastime. One being the relationship between Navadvip Dham and Vrindavan. Nityananda explained to Jiva Goswami. Because Jiva Goswami, after parikrama of Navadvipa with Lord Nityananda, did not want to leave and go to Vrindavan. So he said, "You've already told me that Navadvipa and Vrindavan are not different, so why should I go?" And Lord Nityananda explained, there's no difference in tattva, there's a difference in emotion. In Vrindavan, love for Krishna, Madhurya, eclipses the Odarya, the compassion of Navadvipa. Whereas in Navadvipa, the Odarya, the compassionate nature of love for Krishna, eclipses the Madhurya. Each is contained in the other in full. It's just the increased emotion of Madhurya that creates Vrindavan, whereas the consequent compassion for all jivas manifests Navadvipa. And there is a corresponding enduring mellow in Navadvipa Dham, reminiscent of the subdued charms of the most pure lovers who are now temporarily separated and yearning for one another, which creates this mood and this grace which lures all pilgrims to enter the wide portals of the Holy Dham of Navadvipa, which are forever open to receive all souls with the utmost unreserved and indiscriminate grace ever, where the Lord blesses them with the most exalted form of love of God, distributed, shared directly from the hands of the Lord Himself. So why did the Lord Nimai forbid the Brahmin for telling this story? And how do we know about it if he was forbidden to tell? Who would like to answer? Anybody? Anybody there?
Yes, we are, Maharaj. I guess nobody knows.
Well, then I'll answer for you. That truth was also revealed by Lord Nityananda to Jiva Goswami. That during his Leela, it is not the Lord's desire that his identity be revealed, because he's come to experience what it is to be a devotee. And if he was known to be God and addressed as such, it would spoil his own mood. It would spoil his whole mood. It was after he departed this world that Lord Nityananda instructed Yogamaya, now you can remove that veil and let his true identity be known to the world, because he's already accomplished his mission of desiring to understand Srimati Radharani's love for him. So now it can be revealed that he's not God. I mean, he is God. It was not to be revealed that he was God before. Now it is, because his mission is completed. He's experienced what it is to be a devotee of Krishna. So now, his mood being fulfilled cannot be disrupted by knowledge that he is God. So the second part of the question is, how do we know this story if the Brahmin was forbidden to tell it. That's the other part of Lord Nityananda's explanation, that with the disappearance of the Lord from this world, Lord Nityananda's further instruction to Yogamaya is to now reveal all the hidden scriptures and manifest the yet-to-be-revealed scriptures so that all the world can know that the child of Mother Sachi is the Supreme Lord himself. And with that instruction, which is also a blessing from Lord Nityananda to Yogamaya, we are freed from the difficulties in coming to understand who the son of Sachimata really and truly is. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions or comments? Happy Gaur Purnima. Vanchakalpatribhyasya kripasindhu vitah pativanam bhavani ro vaishyavi.